when you don't have that confidence is so important. It's hard to like let your ego out of the way because it's the one thing you have to hold on to. But I will say this, as entrepreneurs, we are so alone most of the time because most people don't get us. I've said it here before, we're weird to most people. To be able to surround yourself with a group of like-minded people, which are typically other entrepreneurs, is so powerful.
Have you ever felt like there's a secret club of successful contractors and you're left outside? Want in? Well, you've just found the entry door. Welcome to the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Each episode, we pull back the curtain, revealing the stories, strategies, and secrets that top leaders use to grow their home improvement business and enjoy more success, more wealth, and more freedom. Discover more at thewealthycontractor.com. Now let's get into today's episode.
Welcome to another episode of the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. This is Brian Kaskavalsian, and with me today is my friend Charles Serber from Serbers, Windows, and Doors, and Moores. There's other stuff there too. Charles, welcome. It's good to have you.
Glad to be here.
So we've known each other for quite a few years now. You were in one of our original mastermind groups. You are one of the founding members of our Success Society. And you have such a great story and so much has happened in your business and in your life as a result over the last few years. So I thought it would make for a fun and interesting and hopefully inspiring conversation for our listeners. So thanks for agreeing to be here. For those of you that are watching, you see the grin on my face on YouTube. It's because it took a little effort to get Charles here, but you guys will see he has a great story, and I'm excited to share it all. So with that said, Charles, give everybody kind of a background. Give us like the 2-minute version of the Serber story.
All right. 2-minute version is we've now, I think this year, we're going to get into our 44th year. It was mom and dad organization. My father started the business with wood burning stoves, storm windows, and basically high efficient products. Shortly after that, mom kind of took over from 84 to 91, and it was her and my uncle, and we transitioned mostly into actually interior products, window treatments, thermal efficient blinds. And I came into the business in 1994. And at that time, I was going to college, dropped out of college soon to find out that I like to be a window salesman. So that's the really short 2-minute version. Up until I was the only sales guy for the entire organization until 2008. From 1994, really, till 2008, I ran every sales call, and it was just mom and I, is how I put it.
So 1994, so it's 30 years now.
Yes.
Wow. Cool. Okay, so you were the only salesperson until 2008. What happened in 2008?
In 2007, we had 2 showrooms, and we kind of were splitting it between 2 things. So we decided to bring on a salesperson. Cardinal sin. I hired one of my competitors, lead sales guys. It worked, but there was no systems or processes really to control or even how to do it. It was just here's a price book. And it was successful, but unsuccessful at the same time.
How long did it last?
About 2 years.
About 2 years. And then what happened after that?
I went back to running most of the leads again. And then I brought on another person. And at that time, it was actually worked out pretty well because we took one of the people inside of our offices, as you want to say, phone person, showroom help, and an event setter. And he did pretty well for us. It's just some personal stuff happened there with him where he had to move on. And I was back on my own again. So that was probably all the way through 2014, 2015. Back on my own again. It's just a hamster wheel. That's how we'll do it.
So back then, so when you were back on your own again, I mean, even when you had somebody else, give us an idea of your schedule, because you had a hell of a schedule.
Yeah, I mean, it was coming in the morning, 7 a.m., 7, 8 a.m. every morning, work till 7, 8 p.m. every night. I consistently averaged anywhere from 2 million to 2.5 million in sales a year, which kept quite a bit of installers and office people working. It was a grind. It really was. A lot of past customers.
Yeah, mind you all, that was 10 years ago. So that two and a half million is more, probably more like 3 million in today's money.
That's what I tell my guys.
And you were running 6 days a week, right?
Yes. Yeah.
How many leads per day, usually on average?
3 to 4.
3 to 4 leads a
I
day.
ran
So
up to 5.
yeah.
And when we discuss it, one of the things that's really interesting, we have a really good past customer nurturing campaign that we do. So I could run three positive or three nebulous leads, if you want to put it that way, and then I could squeeze in two run by, look at four windows, and shake hands, kiss babies, give money. So that really worked for my effort, having this long nurturing campaign with our past customers for me to be able to run more.
And you took over the business in what year?
I bought the business in 2018.
2018. Okay. And at that time, if you don't mind sharing revenue in the business.
That was actually a low year. I'm going to say, really, one of the things I regret the most is not having a succession plan. Is it was really one of those things where, hey, what are you doing tomorrow? And then I went and bought a company. It was probably some frustration and things that my mother and I at that time was not seeing eye to eye. So we probably 1.7 to where we were.
And so what happened then was you not only were selling everything, but you were running the business too.
Yes. I mean, I'm general manager, lead salesperson, and deal with all customer complaints, a lot of fireman duties.
And you did that for how long?
Still doing it to a degree. Just did, let's see, 20. When was the first? I wasn't on the original mastermind. I was the second coming because COVID hit.
Yeah.
So what was that? 21?
21, I think. Yeah.
All right. When COVID hit, I had had another salesperson and he was terrified of the situation. So I let him go and we ended up, I went back to running another reappointment. And then I got lucky. A guy came knocking on my door that worked for a competitor. Once again, cardinal sin, but it's a relationship now over 4 years that I'm glad we got where we're at. And he's helped me grow this business from a sales methodology that I would have never thought. I joined the mastermind and got beat up by you guys quite a bit. But honestly, it started to help me get to where I could structure my sales team. Now we've got four salespeople. I have not ran really any leads for 2 years.
And that's the goal, right? That's the goal, is to get yourself out of the way. So what was the thing that held you back the most? Because when you're at that, when you're running a business, we talk about this all the time. When you're running a business and you are the essentially chief salesperson, you run up against a ceiling where you just can't go any further. And it's generally, it was 1.2, 1.3, lately, just because of inflation and all that, we could push that up to maybe 1.4, 1.5. But that's two full-time jobs. You basically have two full-time jobs. You're running leads, which is a full-time job. You're not doing that as well as you used to, because now you have another full-time job. You actually have to run the business. Because when you were just a salesperson, you would sell double that amount. And so it's kind of funny how that happens. But what was the thing that held you back the most? Why weren't you able to bring on salespeople and get yourself kind of out of the way?
Well, I mean, those of you that know me now, we can answer. There's several people that'll be laughing about this. I'm a control freak. That's really what it is. I'm a control freak, and you got to check your ego. Honestly, still this day, I still, if I know a job didn't get sold, I still think I would have. And I've got to let that, like water off a duck's back. I just have to let it run away. Ego was probably the number one thing that was in my way. Also, understanding a structure that I knew how to script and how to sell the product. What I really didn't have was really a system how to deliver pricing structure. That's where I was lacking. I knew how to present price, but I didn't have a structure. So once we kind of started working on that, that was probably one of our most heated debates we ever had, but it worked. It was one of those things that got me thinking about how do you expand this into 5, 6, 10 salespeople in the future.
And when you say structure, pricing structure, what do you kind of mean by that?
Well, you can give it a selling system. I mean, I'll give John a plug. I've been using John's. At first, it was Yoho, if you want to say, just going to the Yoho events, which did help, but that's really nothing was presented in a structure. It was there just was, call us, we'll consult with you. With John, at least, and and John, and having the mastermind, I was able to get a selling structure that I could dip my toe into if I liked it or not. That's what we run here now. John and I just talked the other day because my four guys, we almost know it for verbatim. And it's, I don't want to use the words evolutionary change, but it has made a big difference in me not having to worry about what did he do in the home today. It might not be, hey, it's not the way I would do it. I'm going to be honest. This is something that I talk about. It's not the way I would do it, but it has given me the ability to train people quickly and consistently.
So what's interesting about what you just said is that we, and by the way, we're talking about John Anglis and John Anglis's system, selling system. We went back and forth for God, probably what, a year, year and a half, maybe 2 years because of that, because you had your way of doing things and your way was amazing. Was absolutely amazing. The results spoke for themselves. You had a high close rate. You had great relationships. You instinctually knew what to do and how to present. The problem was you couldn't teach it.
Yeah, I can't teach me.
You can't teach exactly.
That was the biggest mental block that we were challenged with. A lot of after dinner discussions was laid out there with a lot of the members, and it was or early breakfast. I'll give a shout out to Jason Herbert, John O'Leary, for not holding me accountable, but being able to see what I needed to do to move forward.
And it took a while. I mean, you were in a group of people that were proving the concept of the owner shouldn't be selling. The owner needs to build a sales team and use a selling system, a sales methodology, whatever you want to call it. And you resisted. And you were right. It was because of your ego, because of control, because you were so damn good at it, which by the way, was exactly John's problem too. Way back when, that was his exact same problem. He's like you, he's a DC, high C. He's gotta be in control. He's got an ego, but he's also got that drive. You guys are so much alike. It's funny, but he had the exact same issue. And when he was able to kind of put that aside and say, okay, maybe I should try the system thing, that's what completely changed for him. And same thing for you.
Oh, it's been, I mean, there's many things. I mean, the selling system definitely has helped. Getting the right people the right seat. We don't run EOS yet, that's how I have to put it. But we do, by being around everybody that does, we start to build a culture like an EOS ideology. So getting the right people in the right seats make a big difference. We did move one of my salespeople into a sales manager's position, which has helped tremendously. Because I took another load off of me. That's from the sales side and revenue generation, the the selling system's made the most difference. It really has. But the number one quantum shift in our company, and you won't even be able to remember this, but you did a Tony Hody event. Now, I think it was in Pittsburgh. We were in an elevator for 15 seconds, and we talked about 15% profitability. And I came back from that meeting. That's when I signed up from G4, and I completely went on the profit first method for our company. And over the course of within 1 year, we were generating a 15% bottom line.
Nice.
So that's probably for me was the biggest thing, because it did, that did create the ability to have revenue to be able to do the things that were probably ego was in the way, but it was also fear because the money wasn't there. So now I don't have that problem.
And you mentioned profit first, which is a great system. It's the envelope system, basically. I got to put in a shameless plug here for the Profit Masters, the company.
Which I'm signed up for. We'll see you.
Yeah. The Mark Curry and I started, where we help companies now engineer profitability 15 to 20%. There's a structure to it. There's a formula for it. And what gets in the way, it's interesting. And you kind of combated it quick in a 15 second elevator ride, was you decided, yes, okay, I'm worth 15%. I think there's a lot of people out there that have not made that shift in their heads. And, you know, they're chasing revenue, doing whatever, 3 million, 10 million. I talked to a guy the other day doing 20 million. But he's at a 5 to 6% net profit. And I'm like, dude, you don't need a $20 million company to make $1 million a year in this business. I mean, you could do it on a $6 million business. Why do you want all the extra hassles and headaches and all of that? But people get wrapped up in, well, I'm doing $20 million, and they get to beat their chest and they get to be on lists and all of that. You went way past that and you're like, I'm going to get rich.
Yeah. The way I looked at it was 4 million, 20%, and we've surpassed that. So, you know, for me, what it really was about financial discipline. That's where I think when I do talk to other people, you know, we talk about 15, 20% net, but then we look at it from a concept of what do we buy with it? And for me, I personally, for the first, well, we're still doing it, but 15% goes into the bank and we hardly touch it. And that has honestly soon to be make some quantum shifts in my business. For me, if I would have not put that financial discipline together and maybe went out and just spent on a marketing or whatever, I wouldn't be able to do the things that I'm going to do now.
Yeah.
And that was for me, probably learn to live off what I could and then put this money aside. And then it kept growing and growing and growing to give me the ability to do stuff with cash on hand.
But you want to give any examples of what it allowed you to do?
Since 1991, we've been working out of three buildings on one road, anywhere from 3,500 to 5,000 square foot buildings. We're crammed. I actually don't even have enough parking spaces, so we just invested into a 14,000 square foot building. It's going to be on the second busiest intersection in our community, and it's actually an entrance that goes into Walmart. So we're looking at about 3 to 4 million cars a year are going to be going in and out in front of our building. We're going to be building somewhere between a 6 to 7,000 square foot showroom and a 7,000 square foot warehouse.
Yeah.
And there's more to it.
Yeah. It's a killer building.
Too. It's going to be awesome. We actually, we take possession of it next Friday.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. So that's exciting.
I'm excited and not nervous. That's the interesting thing. I'm nervous for what's going to happen. But it's funded by me.
Yeah.
So I'm writing a check for it. I don't have to worry about getting anything. I can take 6 months to do this thing due to putting our financial discipline in place. That's from having a great sales team to having a great financial discipline. And the next is the production. We've always lagged on production, but we're getting there. With the production, our revenue is not where we need it to be. Our sales is about 30% higher where our revenue is.
Yeah. So it's creating backlog, and that could have a very negative impact.
Correct.
On profitability. And I like what you said about financial discipline, because it really is about financial discipline. It's about understanding how the numbers in this business work. people get confused and they are not confused, but they think that they make it a lot harder than it really needs to be. The interesting thing about this business is that you can design profitability. I don't know too much about other industries. It's been a long time since I've consulted outside of this industry or been involved in businesses that are outside of our industry. There was a time where I had, I don't know, like two dozen different businesses that I either consulted with or was somehow brought in to help with. So I understood the numbers there a little bit better, but the last 15 years I've just been focused on this. And people don't realize you can design profitability in this business. And that's what, you know, that's part of what we're doing with Profit Masters. It's what we've done with the profit workshops. And I love to see people like you that actually execute on these plans. And so let's talk about a little bit about, so cash in the bank is a good thing. Financial discipline leads to cash in the bank. You're able to now invest in an asset, something that's owned by a company you control that's now being renting space out to your business. The business is paying you or your company that you control outside of the business rent, which covers your all of your mortgage and your payments and all of that. So now you've built an asset, which is amazing. You're building your wealth. What else has the cash kind of allowed you to do, if you don't mind sharing one or two more examples?
One of the things we discussed in our meetings one time that stuck with me is the 80%. I'm always looking for perfection, to be honest. And I get that's where we get in our way. That's where the high C in me comes in. I want to have it perfect before I launched it. So that 80%, I think by having, you know, you can use the words disposable income, can let you fail a little more. Now you got to watch it, but you know, like our tech stack, we're starting to get more into technology. And I'm a big proponent of nothing. I don't like paying anything monthly. I like to pay in full. And it's just one of those things.
Me too. Yeah, me too.
If I can write, I mean, like our membership fee, I would rather write that in full because that commits me for a year. But it's also, I don't have that. I don't see it on the P&L in that way. It's just done. So there's some of that with, we just signed up, you know, shameless plug here. We went with One Click Contractor. And part of the deal that I did with them was I paid for it in a year for our reps. So that I don't have to worry about it. We're designing it out, but it's there. So that financial discipline has given me the ability to maybe try some things I wouldn't. We just, we're running TV commercials now, and TV is giving something that's desperately brand new and scary because it's a incredibly large bill for me monthly. And I don't feel it working. I'm not seeing the ROI right now because we've only been doing it for a month and a half. So we've got this 6-month committal that we're going to stick with. And it's, you got to spend money to make money, I guess. But I know it'll work out. Plus, it's given me the opportunity that we now have 4 canvassers knocking on doors. And that's money in the bank that we're doing. And that's a new program for us since last September. So everything I'm doing, I feel like I've got the money set aside to tweak it and play with it, not just to throw darts at a dartboard and see if it sticks.
It's that time again. Accelerate Live 2025 is happening at the beautiful Omni Resort on Amelia Island, February 11th and 12th, with special bonus workshops on the 13th. If you enjoy this podcast and still haven't made it to an Accelerate Live, now is finally the time to take the leap and see why this has become the number one event for owners, operators, and leaders in the home improvement industry. For 2 days, you'll discover proven strategies, plug-and-play tactics, tools, and resources on what's working now in sales, marketing, production, leadership, profitability, and mindset. You'll see exactly how to build the business of your dreams better, faster, stronger. You'll network with your peers and industry legends. You'll forge lifelong connections that can transform your business and change the course of your life. So if there's one event you attend in 2025,
make it Accelerate Live. Tickets will go fast, so grab your seat today at accelerateevent.com. That's accelerateevent.com. And make sure to use coupon code podcast25 to get an extra $100 off. That's podcast25. You have nothing to lose because of our 100% risk-free guarantee. So don't wait. Secure your spot today, and I'll see you there.
Well, and you said something very interesting. So, you know, our friend Scott Berman, he says all the time that profits, good profits, high profitability allows you to make mistakes.
It's okay to be wrong. Just don't be wrong for long.
Exactly. And you cannot succeed in business without making mistakes. Even like us, where we're surrounded by all of these people, where if we have a question about the business, you and I are one phone call away, being in Success Society, we are one phone call away from the answer. But you still have to execute it. You still have to, you know, put the money out there. You have to take the chance. You have to manage it. And when you've got that cushion there, you can fail quick. I shouldn't say fail. You can learn quick.
Correct.
You can make mistakes, learn from the mistake, tweak it, and get it right. So a lot of people right now, let's talk about your canvassing program. So we're in a situation now, COVID boom's done, it's over. Leads have slowed down. Companies that have relied, and we've talked about this here on the podcast quite a bit the last few months, companies that were relying on aggregators and on internet marketing companies and basically like outsourcing all of their marketing to these two sources are going to find themselves in a lot of trouble because those two sources are very, they're hands off and they don't make leads. They're taking leads. And it, to survive and thrive in this business, it was like this before COVID, the only COVID time, that 3-year span where it was unlike any other time in this business where the leads were plentiful. But it's going back to the way it was, where we have to go out, if we're going to succeed in this business, we have to go out and make leads. Well, canvassing is one of the toughest ways to go out and make leads. You got to hire people that aren't professional, quote unquote, professional. They're going to get rejected a lot. It takes a very special type of person to go and knock on doors. And you got to fund all of that.
I know they're going to listen to this. So of course, I'm going to throw it out there that our canvassing program would not be where it's at. For one, if it wasn't for Chris Wilmotson from Tony coming in, we brought him in a couple times.
Yeah.
It's well worth the investment. And then you're going to run through some people. I've got, if you want to say my marketing manager by the name of John, which is phenomenal. He watches after him. He actually calls them his guys. And I've got 3 canvassers right now that the definition of rock star might be a little heavy, but they're doing really good for me.
Yeah.
It's always a work in progress. Every morning, I'd probably say to myself that if it was easy, everybody'd do it.
Oh, yeah.
So canvassing is probably one of the hardest things we've ever done, but I've always liked face-to-face marketing. We've always done home shows, fairs, even if it was me doing them. Even our own personal events, which we're getting ready to have one here in a month. So having the face-to-face side of this is something that we've always done. Canvassing is new, but... so far, as of January 1st, 50% of every lead that we've ran this year is from face-to-face.
Wow.
We have not turned on a lead aggregator since the end of January.
So now what does that do? Just to everybody listening, he's in control.
Correct.
Of his business.
We're hiring hopefully 2 more within the next week.
Yeah.
It's challenging because it's the people element.
Yeah.
You have to manage personalities. And when we hire for these, we DISC assess every one of them, and they're high D's and high I's. So you either got somebody that is telling you how you're doing it wrong, or you got somebody that's emotionally invested that you got to blow their ego up all the time. So it's a very delicate situation on the DISC assessment, because the high S's and high C's can't do it. They're going to take rejection wrong. So you're trying to hire, and if you can't manage D's, you'll fail. That's the way it is, because they're performance-based, goal-oriented individuals, and they're very hard to manage. I just had a little meeting with them today because they needed to see the path. And my marketing manager has a hard time managing them when there's resistance. I have no problem.
Have no problem.
No, this is where it is. I bring it out black and white, and they're good with it. And I'm just expressing to them, we're going to get 2 to 3 more, and we're expanding our recruiting element with that.
When did you start that program, for a little context?
Well, we started it, it's been about a year, really. It failed. I mean, most people would have hung it up the way,
that's where I was going, actually.
Yeah. Burnt down the building. It was horrible.
Yeah.
It really was, because we couldn't manage the people and we hired the wrong assessment of them. Then we started with the Canvas manager position first with no Canvas service. And then we went to events, and then we went into canvassing and through the brand ambassador program more than canvassing. And then the brand ambassador evolved into more canvassing.
Yeah.
So it was baby steps.
Yeah.
And right now, as of today, I'm $500,000 away from last year's revenue.
And we're in the middle of August. So by the end of the month,
by the middle of September, we'll be all of last year.
Yeah. Nice.
Which is, you had a conversation years ago about where I wanted to be. That's in the rearview mirror alone.
It's funny, right? It's amazing.
It is. Once you get there, it's the system, the process, and the people.
Yeah.
And we were able to, and I'm open about where we want to go. And it's like they want to push the envelope for me. The sales team, definitely. And then the canvassers and the other marketers really want to see us eclipse to the next level.
So it's interesting that you brought that up. And I want to make sure that we talk about the event that you have coming up, because you do that as well as anybody I've ever seen. You and Big Steve Rennekamp do that as good as anybody I've ever seen. But let's stay on this for a minute. So what you said is right. Most people would have given up because it's not producing right away. Oh my God, it's hard. They wouldn't have been able to hire outside help to come in and say, okay, show me how to do this the right way. And that's not a cheap investment. But because you're profitable enough, I'm going back to the profitability thing. If you were at 5-6%, man, you're barely, hanging on. You're barely able to feed your family, even if you're bringing in, the kind of numbers that you are, but it's still, you don't have enough money to take chances. You don't have enough money to make mistakes. And you need to be able to do that, because at the end of the day, it's all of us execute. We can give the blueprints of this is how you do it. We can hold your hand. We can show you how to do it. And I'm just talking in broad terms to owners. Everybody executes differently. This idea that, this is why consulting and, I don't want to talk bad about the consulting industry. I mean, this is why I'm never going to be a consultant, is because it just doesn't work. I can't take a cookie cutter approach, give it to you and say, okay, go execute and leave and expect it to get done the right way. It requires somebody to be there to drive it, to be able to make mistakes and be okay with making mistakes, to learn from those mistakes and adapt, because everybody's style is a little bit different. Everybody's mindset is in a different place. The hunger is different. The fear level, the risk tolerance is different in everybody. And so the more you can do to stack the deck in your favor. So in your case, good profitability. You've surrounded yourself through you know, this group that we're in. You've surrounded yourself with people that are going to support you, that are going to lift you up. You're able to pay to get the best advice out there to execute on these systems. You aren't running leads. Here's another biggie. You aren't running leads. And so you have time to sit in your office and learn about DISC profiling. You've gotten really good at that over the last couple of years. I mean, you're throwing D's and C's and I's and S's out there. And some people are like, what the hell is he talking about? We're talking about DISC profiling. But it's you know, Dave Yoho just sent me his new profile book. I mean, it's really good.
That's who we assign with. I mean, I use all of Dave's stuff.
I love Dave. DISC analysis profile tutorial, an advanced training workbook. And he goes into it step by step in this book about what you're looking for, what positions, and John does this too. John Angus.
John's on a different level with it.
He's like certified, I think. He's DISC certified.
For DISC, really what it did for me was it's nice to take the position with the profile, but I overlay their personality to mine. And that's something. Because I come across a little corrupt. That's how we'll put it. I can be short, standoffish, all that guarded. I did another one. Sean Foyer did one, and it actually made the office laugh because in there was a line item that said, stay 3 feet away from Charles at all times.
Yeah, that's good advice.
So I just look at it. The DISC for me helps me right now I got one employee that, before I make an executive decision on him, I'll go back and read his DISC analysis to see where maybe I'm at fault because I can't see it. But it's a good thing. But you talk about all these things, but that's where the profitability was able to give me the opportunity to do. You know, I wouldn't have been able to do the Yoho DISC analysis. I wouldn't have hired some of the people through the Accelerate organization, people like Socius to, even though I started at Paradigm Vindo, I ended up at OneClick, but the profitability gave me the opportunity to be able to try these out. And it's a trial thing. It really is. It doesn't mean it's etched in stone here. If we find something better, we will move.
You have the ability to make these changes and make them quickly.
Yeah. And by being surrounded by the people that we are, I mean, one thing that I've probably in the last 4 years is that when I come to our meetings or when I'm on our Zoom calls or whatever, is that I try to get as much out of it as I can every time. I'm going to try to get my value. We know this. And it's just like I was fortunate enough to bring my P&L to the last meeting and Charlie took it overnight and had a little one-on-one with me for 15 minutes. And he shared some insights really about my marketing side. My marketing for what we're doing is pretty low. We're pretty happy. We're running a 6%.
Nice.
But our bottom line was 18.6. So, yeah, he brought up a little thing there that I never really thought. He's like, why don't you take 3% of that and push it into marketing and see where you go? So we're running some scenarios of where I could spend a little more money, and we're looking at some new avenues for some events. So we're getting this cleaned up in the profitability side, so that our numbers will dictate our success.
Yeah. So you're basically planning your success, you're engineering your success, and you're working towards it. And by the way, you know, one of the things for those of us that know you and have been around you, what a different temperament you have today than you did 4 years ago.
Sure.
And I gotta say to the people listening, I mean, Charles is just he's a good man, got a good heart. He's just a good man. But if you met him 4 or 5 years ago, you literally did have to be 3 feet away from him because he could like snap at you if he didn't like what you said. And not that made him a bad person. It's just you were so conflicted inside, and your ego got in.
I'm the first one to say I've learned to check my ego a little bit better. And by being in the group, it has opened up, for one, trust and friendship. Big thing. I mean, I can go through the list of people that I can pick up on the phone, and it might be a 10 to 15, sometimes it ends up being an hour conversation, because it's great to have that perspective that I would have never gotten because I was alone. It was just me. I didn't have anybody else. So from marketing to how to handle a bad employee, what would you do here? You know, and it's amazing I'm still going to call it the mastermind. It's hard to rattle.
I still sometimes call
it's hard to rattle off too. The success society.
You're right.
And, you know, suffering succotash.
Yeah.
I'm grateful to be part of it. And like right now, I mean, I was concerned with the move. Yeah, I'm going to say that.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky that I got a mentor or a coach, if you want to say, in Charlie.
Yeah.
So I'm lucky to have that. I'm very fortunate. And
I'm fortunate to have very good friends in the industry that want to help.
And that's what I mean. Charlie's extremely genuine to want to help. And I like that. We had our little meeting the other day, and I'm open about our canvassing, where a lot of people, you know, it is scary to move forward with that, but we're going to have a record year this year. And when I mean record, we're going to be above 50%. And it's because of the things that we've kind of pressed me and challenged me to do to get there. Let's talk about my event. How's that?
Well, I just want to wrap this up for a second, because one of the things, and thank you for letting me do that with you, because I really do. I think the world of you and Amanda, and I've got so much respect, because I saw it was tough. It's tough for all of us. It was tough for me. You know, all of that stuff that we could say about you, well, that was me too. You know, it's like when you don't have that confidence. Confidence is so important. It's hard to like let your ego out of the way, because it's the one thing you have to hold on to. But I will say this, as entrepreneurs, we are so alone most of the time, because most people don't get us. I've said it here before, we're weird to most people. And to be able to surround yourself with a group of like-minded people, which are typically other entrepreneurs, is so powerful, and it gives you such a different perspective, and it gives you friendships, but friendships of like, who else can you talk to about your fears? Who can you talk to about your successes? You know, that some of the stuff that that you and I have texted back and forth, some, like, who could you tell that? I think you even mentioned that once to me. You said, my God, Brian, I can't even tell anybody in my family about this.
There's some of that. I mean, being in a group, for one, really what the group did for me was it showed me that there's other people that have surpassed where I even want to be. Then it's kind of funny. It's like, you know, how do you get to 3 million? Well, you get to 3 million. How do you get to 4? You get to 4 million. How do you get to 5? How do you get to 6 million? 7? And you see the roadmap, because you're starting to surround yourself by people that's already done it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've already done it. And you think, well, how did you do it? And you find out that the secret sauce isn't as special as you want it to be. It comes down to dedication. Do you really want to go there? And me and you've had some candid talks. And at first it was, no, I didn't want to go there.
Yeah.
You know, but a year ago it was 4 million and retire. You know, with somebody to run the company. Now it's, how do we get to 25? And it's not about the number anymore. There's a lot more purpose driven with me now of how do I help my employees get to what they want to achieve, and maybe even community based. A couple things, shameless plug for me is, you know, for every window, a door, bathroom, now we donate anywhere from 10 to 25 meals to our local food bank.
That's amazing. And yeah.
As of last week, we're over 20,000 meals donated. So I've tied it up to a purpose. So now we can talk, and it's kind of funny, at the end of the month, how many meals do we donate? Now, how much revenue do we generate?
Yeah.
And with our new showroom, we're actually going to have a food kiosk drop-off place. So for our community. So there's some things that I'm tying to a purpose, not to revenue.
Yeah, which, by the way, the Bill McGraw, who's been here on the podcast before, he's huge with the food drives and donations to the food banks. And we've got to get that. We've got to release that document again, because if even a small percentage of the company's owners that listen to this podcast were to put something like that into place, God, the number of people that we could help feed, and especially this—I mean, it's so needed right now. So we should think about how maybe we could put something out to the community. Maybe we do something at Accelerate,
Bill's
where
program is
maybe,
pretty neat. Bill's
yeah,
on steroids.
Bill's a, Bill's on
Bill's on
steroids. But
steroids.
look, but what you're doing is amazing. Also, I'm 20,000 meals.
Yeah, and then we just started it, and our goal's, I don't know if we'll hit it. Our goal's 50. There's an interesting thing. I got the idea. I mean, we've been doing it all along. This is not something for our annual open house. We'd always had a food drive. When COVID hit, we mailed out a letter to our 7,000 active customers, and we asked for food donations. And at first, I thought it was just a bust. And then about 10 days went by, and we ended up collecting a little over 4,000 pounds of groceries that people delivered to
Wow,
our showroom.
yeah.
And we decided to make that part of our company. So every open house going forward, we would match whatever people delivered. And I seen Bill speak. It was one of the great things. There's a book that he recommends called Tom's Shoes, I think is what it is. It's a good book.
Well, it's a guy that started Tom's Shoes. I forgot the name, yeah.
And I read it, and I kind of piggybacked on Bill's idea because it kind of worked already in our nature, and I liked it. And so we don't go to where we collect it from the homeowners. We actually just do a matching program ourselves. We got a TV commercial running about it right now, and I actually was asked about it in the home the other day, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, nice. So tell us about open house. So this is something I've been talking about for 15 years. Very few people do it. You are one of them, and you do it incredibly well. Tell us what it is. Tell us why it works, and if you're going to do anything fun and interesting with it this year.
Well, the sad part about it is we're getting ready to have our last ever at this location, 21st of September, sorry, on 21st, I think so, 21st of September. We do it on a Friday and Saturday. What we'll do is we usually go back anywhere from 5 to 7 years of all of our past customers, and we'll do a personal mailer to them. Usually get some vendor kick in a little bit, discounts, all that. And we've had as much as up to, in the 2 days, almost 500 people came. We do a big cookout. We do a big circus tent next to the office, and it's just a revolving door. Now, that's once again why people don't want to do it. It's a lot of work. You got to do it right. Where we've evolved, it's not just some Cokes and some Fritos in an open house. We actually do 30 to 50 tables worth of, picnic tables, chairs, and home cooked food. And people come just religiously. I was asked about it the other day when I was remeasuring a product. Are we going to have our open house? And people come just to hang out. But we always encourage them to bring somebody with them. And we'll do 50 gift baskets a day. And we hand them out. So 100 gift baskets in all. And at that time, there's some tricks. Like I just did, I'm in the process of doing this. We will rehash every job we ran for the year. This is hard to do because you can't just do a 10% discount. I personally write a formal letter to each and every no sale is what we call it, and we rehash it with a discount from our vendor. The most I've ever written standing in the showroom was $190,000 in one day. So that's people bringing in. And if I get a window company gives me 10% off, it doesn't hurt me. But it's a lot of effort and energy, but it also is kind of fun because you get to see your customers too. I like it because now I don't get to see my customers as much as I used to. So I get people to come in and they tell me about, an Alan or an Austin or a Kevin or a Jalen, opportunity that they're such nice people. And that's something where they come in and they talk about the old days about my mom, which is cool.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a customer, you call it an open house. I've called it a customer appreciation event. I mean, whatever you call it, one of the big things that it does is it shows your customers you care. Like you said, you get to meet your customers. You get to talk with them. It creates stickiness. Your repeat referral business, I mean, for a long time was, I think, the biggest part of your...
It was 60% of my business.
Yeah. And now it's gotten, you know,
but
it's stable. You know, it's in that one third ish range, probably, which is where I think all of these businesses should be. Is that about a third of your business coming from those relationships? And this one strategy is like one of the most powerful strategies. And so few people will do it. You already have the location. You're essentially creating your own event. And people that do it, like you, like Big Steve, I mean, it's a moneymaker. It's a lot of work.
We're going to do 4 to 5 events starting in the new showroom next year. I mean, from anything we can do that's community driven to trunk or treat. I don't care. You know, the more that you can do to draw people into your place of business, for one, they get to see how you run your company. I think that means a lot. The very first open house was 3 picnic tables in a parking lot. So it's evolved. It is something silly. But we literally have customers asking about when we're going to do it every year. Or if they missed it, they call and ask if they missed it. So, and you're going to see the same people over and over and over. But
that's great.
That's great. It bring a friend.
Bring a friend.
Bring but a friend.
It, it
a
keeps friend. You top of mind. And after you're done with the job, that's the goal. The goal is do not let your customers forget who you are because they've got more money to spend. They have friends. They can refer you. It's not going to happen necessarily tomorrow. It may not even happen for 6 months. It may not happen for 3 years. But if you're there, if you're there, if you're there, if you're there, that's the best lead you can get. But you got to put in the work.
We do it kind of at the peak season because it just happens to be our anniversary. Our anniversary actually is October 8th. So we moved it up to a little better weather. But to anybody out there thinking or considering this, statistically, most people know what their bad month is. Where
exactly.
That's the time to do it.
That's the time to do it. Is right.
Now, for us, we've always historically, you know, the dog days of summer, August, a good example, like right now. Even though we're having a very good August this year, historically, we weren't knocking on doors or anything, and we would always have a bad August back to school type thing. We should have an open house or an event during that time, and you would get people to come.
Yeah. By the way, let's you and I have a quick chat since it's coming up in September. I think what would be really great is if you had a... Anyway, let's talk about it because I think that there's a way that you can either do video recordings or something and present it to Success Society in November. I think that would be an amazing presentation that shows everybody in the group how you've done it, what it looks like, how to put it on themselves. And what I'll also do right now, we've said shameless plug, I don't know how many times on this podcast, but I will do a shameless plug for the Success Society. If anybody's interested in joining and people like Charles in the group, just go to thewealthycontractor.com and, or, you know, reach out to us and we'll be happy to talk to you about it. Well, look, my friend, this has been great. We went way over, and I thank you so much for sharing. Again, I appreciate you and Amanda so much.
You're welcome.
Your success.
I'm not a big emotional guy, but thank you for your support. Thank you for your mentorship. So I appreciate it greatly.
Yeah, really. It's an absolute pleasure. I mean, seeing you guys do the things that you've done is like the greatest thing for me. It's so fun. It's like... makes life worth living. That's very dramatic shit, but kind of true.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Well, we're just touching the top. I mean,
Well, it'd be interesting. Yeah, it's going to be cool to see where we all end up a few years from now. All right, everybody. Well, Thank you for listening. And again, if you're interested in Success Society or any of the other stuff that Wealthy Contractor has going on, just go visit us at thewealthycontractor.com. And we're happy to share anything with you all. So until next time, this is Brian Kaskavalsian, and this is the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. For insights on skyrocketing your home improvement business and accelerating your journey to the success, wealth, and freedom you've always dreamed about, be sure to get your free copy of my best-selling book, The 7 Secrets to Becoming a Wealthy Contractor, at www.thewealthycontractor.com. And don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. See you next time.